Justin, I want to take you back to some time, I think it was in 2017. And I ask you this question because I was doing a little bit of research about you and Carlos Alazraki and all that stuff. And I happen to be on YouTube and I see this thing on the AV Club's channel.
Yep.
The Onion AV Club, pretty big channel there.
Yep.
There's a video there that says the voice of Rocco, Carlos Alazraki, talks the return of Rocco's modern life. And it looks like this interview had just happened after a panel discussion at San Diego's Comic-Con.
Yeah, and I remember that interview, yeah.
And by the way, he mentions you, so I know I know that you were there when this anecdote happened. And he talks about how he found out that the character he voiced in Rocco's Modern Life was going to be brought back for a feature-length film.
Yes.
And it sounds like a fascinating incident. Not the least of which is the fact that that was probably immediately social media fodder for you and your efforts, but in a very careful way, because this was still pre-production. So
that's right.
How much can you talk about? How much you can't? Can you take us? Can we sit on your shoulder as you're having this lunch conversation with Carlos and I believe some of the producers of Rocco's Modern Life?
Yeah, Rocco's Modern Life. It's funny. I had a little bit of a pinch me moment because I watched that show when I was a kid. So knowing that he was the voice of Rocco took a little bit of restraint from my own end. I had a little bit of fanboy in me, and I still do. I mean, he's a great, wonderful guy. But the fact that he's voicing these shows for that many years, it's really great to work alongside him. So it's the little dream come true thing happens every so often, as do with all of these actors and things that they've seen themselves. But this incident you're talking about is we were just having lunch and it was really early in our agreement days, but we were just partnering up and we were at a restaurant and just looking over, he kind of put his hands in the air and said, "What's going on?" And the entire production team for the old Rocco's Modern Life show walked in the door and sat at the booth across from us. And they kind of had a deer in headlights kind of thing going on because things were still sort of secret. But at that moment is when they told us, yeah, we're bringing Rocco back. So Carlos found out at that lunch while I was sitting with him. And he said, "Oh, well, I just hired this guy as my social media guy. So we have a lot of work to do." And what's interesting about bringing that up, that story, is something I wanted to mention. And is a lot of my job, especially with actors, is also working with the rest of their team. And that can be a manager. It can be a PR agency, a publicist. It can be an agent. It can be a theatrical agent, a convention agent. There's a whole slew of people that I can talk to. But also, I'm talking constantly to the social team on these networks that their shows are on. So it's a big relief, actually, for actors to be able to have that person for them to connect to and not have them worry about it. You know, if they're in an interview, for instance, let's say that they're being interviewed by AV Club, like you brought up, there are certain things we can say and certain things we can't say. So I know ahead of time, because I've been alerted by the social team at Nickelodeon, what we can say and what we can't. And I always check ahead of time. And so I'll tell Carlos, he's like, "Hey, you can say this, but you can't say that. Just a reminder." So that way he's aware and I'm on that all the time. So my job is in the background, being on top of characterization, what release dates there are, what we can say, what we can't say, and also what are the things that we want to put out there. So I'm constantly getting emails and phone calls from Disney, DreamWorks, Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, from their team, because they know that I help to manage my voice actors. And they're the ones that are saying, "Hey, could you put this on the social calendar for these people or let them know? We want to kind of make sure we have this information, the date, the time, and then you can put it in your own voice." And so we help my actors craft this announcement that's personalized for them, but also containing the important information. So a big part of my job is also working with the actual networks when we release things. So I'm often the first to know stuff like that. I saw the new Rocco's Modern Life film, I think, 3 years before everybody else saw it.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, so there's definite perks to it. I mean, I go to all the premieres and I know about things before they come out. And it's funny because, you know, I knew that Reno 911 was coming back too, way before anybody else knew it. So holding that information is a big job too.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Culture Chicken Brand Egg. What's that? It's one of my most requested presentations, now available as in-person live or virtual online presentations. If you've got a group or association that loves presentations that inspire, inform, entertain, and get you going at the same time, we should talk. Head on over to dpknewton.com/speaking to download my full speaker media kit today, and let's start talking about how I can help you get your party started.
Well, and I can't help but think that you're a big part of the professionalism that Carlos and other actors like him project, because one of the things that, you know, people walking down the street don't necessarily know is that if you're an actor and you are the one who spills the beans about the production a year in advance of the production, you could easily not be hireable anymore, because all of a sudden you're perceived as unprofessional, not understanding about the way things work. Again, push comes to shove and you've got actor A and actor Z, and one is a blabbermouth and the other one plays the game really well and has a great social following. Guess who's going to get that job? Because your reputation is, to me, a component, but not the whole part of your personal brand. Reputation definitely precedes you into the room, but so does your professionalism. So does your ability, your range, your style, your easy to work with or notness, which is huge when it comes to casting decisions.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important for these actors to have teams of people, because it's a lot to remember. I mean, this press release and that press release, if you shot 10 projects over a 3-year period, how do you keep straight what's releasable and what you can say and when you can't say? So it's really important, and it's ideal to have these people in your team to help manage all of that. Because really, as an artist, as a creator, I mean, I'm a singer too. So when you're a performer of any kind, really, you should just be focused on your craft. You should be focused on getting the energy and the inspiration and to study your lines and really go deep into character development. You shouldn't have to be worrying about dates and times and publicity and fan counts and all that stuff. And so you really do need someone to help you with that. And that's not just with acting. I think that's with anything. You know, I have another client, probably one of my only, I have a couple that are actually businesses. But this particular person, her name is Margie Wakeman Wells, and she's extremely well known in the court reporting world. So she's like the end all be all of the English language for court reporters, but people know of her stuff just because of her name. And so that's the reputation there is extremely viable in that case.
I just want to underline what you just said. There is someone in this world, in this incredible niche part of human endeavor called court reporting, that is globally known in the English language as the woman when it comes to court reporting. She has a personal brand that has a huge footprint in a very small area.
Yeah.
And you were, are you saying you're doing social media work for a court reporter?
She no longer a court reporter. She's in her 70s and she taught court reporting for about 40 years. So all the students and all the actual working court reporters are constantly looking to her for the end-all be-all rule. So often you'll see in chat groups, oh, but MWW says this rule, that rule. So she's a household name in the industry of court reporting for sure.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for that anecdote. I am going to take that and include that in the new book I'm writing on building a personal brand via your nonfiction brand, because that's my point, which is no matter how niche or narrow or niche, whatever word you want to use, your sector of business is, there is somebody that is the ne plus ultra, the sui generis, whatever foreign term you want to use, the best of the best, who everyone looks to. And my point is, why isn't that you?
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to be a Hollywood voice actor to build a personal brand that could elevate you significantly above the garden variety commodity people who do what you do. Putting yourself out there in a regular way, especially via social media, can be incredibly effective about elevating yourself out of that barrel of commodity people who do what you do and put you on an entirely different shelf, if you will.
Absolutely.
That's so important. Well, I want to talk about Justin Baker or Fuzz Baker and how you got into doing what you do. I mean, okay, so you've got a degree in voice performance.
That's right.
And you were a public school music teacher.
That's right. Yeah, right after college, I taught music for a little bit. For about 10 years, I was a school teacher.
So how did you shift into working with Hollywood voice actors and others on their social media?
Yeah, well, it sounds a little crazy, but it was kind of by accident. So I, after I was teaching for a while, I got into, from the music sector, I went into kind of theater and teaching theater, and that kind of led me into teaching film and making film and television. So I got really in depth with that. So it was just natural to make a move to Los Angeles to kind of really work in that field full time. So after I left teaching and moved out here to Los Angeles, I worked in film as a PA and then in the production department. And then I also did some assistant director work on some films and I really loved it. And so having that background really helped me to kind of see that world from that end of the spectrum. When a company I was working for kind of shut down and I was kind of out of work for a while, I was kind of just saying, you know, I want to do my own thing. And so I created my own production company, per se, and I was kind of working on developing short films and a documentary film, which I'm still directing at the moment. But that really got me into thinking about telling stories, which I've always loved. I mean, I think at heart, I really am a filmmaker at all times. And I kind of stumbled upon Twitter. And when I first got my Twitter account back in 2008, I thought it was just for, you know, putting like what you're eating for lunch or whatever. So I didn't really notice the impact of it. And what I began to realize, I remember I was sitting in my bedroom and watching kind of like this lynda.com course on social media. And it dawned on me that Twitter is just a micro script. It is a micro way of storytelling. And so I kind of was like, wow, I can actually delve into this new world of storytelling that's lifelong and with real people. So that really appealed to me. So I started to get everything I could to learn about social media marketing, or I guess storytelling, really. And so now I've applied that filter through everything I do through social media. It's just a big movie for me.
Oh, that's really interesting, you know, because I, like you, when Twitter first came out, I hopped on there and it was still people taking, you know, talking about what they had for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a lurker.
Which is still important, by the way.
Yeah, well, of course, especially if it can be an artful shot that you can share with others. But for the longest time, I've been a lurker there and I still am, you know. But that whole idea of 140 characters at the beginning, now 280 characters, being nothing more than a short form version of storytelling. Yeah. I think that's a great way to look at it, especially for people who might be a little bit Twitter agnostic. It's like, why would I ever use Twitter? And it's like, well, if you can tell your story in little bites over time, people will learn exactly who you are, what you do, and how you do it. And the big benefit of doing it that way is every time you tweet, it's like a little ping on everybody's radar that knows you. It's like, oh, yeah, I haven't thought about that person forever. And if you're doing it in your industry and people aren't, guess who gets the attention? You do.
That's right. And you know, it's also, even if nobody sees it, it's actually, I have found personally, it's a great tool just to practice your writing skills.
Hmm.
Because when we're talking about personal branding, I mean, a lot of the challenge of that is people don't even know what their personal brand is. And then unless you exercise that and practice that, you're never going to know. And so whether that is writing, maybe you find that you have a gift in writing tweets in a short form way quickly, right? And my writing skills have gone through the roof because I'm tweeting several times a day. So I know how to concisely tell a story quickly now, very easily. But I struggled and think, oh, what do I do? But it might be, maybe you learn that you write well, or maybe it's like, oh, I can tell a photo story on Instagram really well now because I'm doing it every day. Or I can create this 30-minute YouTube piece that really tells a nice story, you know, or I can go on Facebook and really write an op-ed piece to this article that helps us think about the world differently. So unless you practice that without worrying about who's seeing it, you're not going to develop your personal brand without any sort of practice to any of those fields. And so that's that's what I'd recommend the most for anybody, is just to put things out there until you find what your road is.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And the whole thing is, it's like going to the gym and picking up that 1 pound weight. The first thing you did right was you got to the gym.
Yeah.
The second thing you did right was pick up that 1 pound weight and do some reps. And then the next thing you do right is you come back the next day and you do a little bit more. And over time, you'll get better and better at it. So, you know, I hear you when it comes to writing tweets. 280 characters. What can you say in 280 characters? Oh, my gosh. You can say a whole lot because you develop the skills to edit. And that's what good writers do. Good writers edit more than they write. They'll write a bunch of blah and then go through it and just strip out the extraneous, the stuff that doesn't matter, you know, to get it as tight as possible.
Yeah.
There's an old story about the mathematician Blaise Pascal, who wrote a guy saying, "I'm sorry that I wrote so much in this letter because I didn't have time to make it shorter, or I didn't have time to make it better."
Yeah, and that's what good storytellers do regardless. It doesn't have to be writing. I mean, you can edit. If you're a good film director, if you're constantly editing in your head too.
Yeah.
Or if you're creating an image, then you can edit properly to tell the story you want to tell. It's really about how good of a storyteller you are in any of those mediums. But editing, yeah, if you can edit along the way as you're creating, that's a skill that you can develop for sure.
Yeah, and you have the benefit of no one watching at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then what it serves as is it's really a personal log of how far you've come. And you have all this stuff to look back at. And you can say, wow, I kind of actually did get better. So that's why I encourage people to blog. Any kind of client I take on originally, I say, okay, you need to start blogging right now. Just start weekly putting it out there. Start getting used to the idea of writing.
Yeah, well, in Twitter, when it first came out, it was considered a microblog.
Right, exactly.
And I guess, what is your definition of blog for people who are like, I think I know what a blog is, but what's your working definition when you talk to a new client and
yeah.
you say, you need to be blogging? And they go, well, what do you mean? What's a blog?
Yeah. Well, for them, I mean, it's at least a weekly expression of thought in a certain subject area that's at least 300 words. So, you know, and there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, one, 300 words is what Google will crawl. So you're putting it out there that's viable. But it's also a way for you to start physically branding yourself with your voice of writing. I have another client of mine. They're also not actors, they're musicians, but they're very successful. They were one of my first clients ever, and they're a vocal cello duo called Brandon and James, and they tour worldwide. They're playing concerts all over the world, and one of them was a finalist on America's Got Talent, and the other one's from Australia, and they met, and now they're playing duos all over the place. But they took me on early in my career. And I said, okay, trust me, I can make this work for you, but you have to do what I tell you. And one of the things was, you need to write a blog every single week. And they hated it. But after a while, they started to like it. And to this day, they still write blogs. And that blog writing is what got them on the map. It got them on the top of Google. It got them a Wikipedia page. And it also got, eventually, an agent that read the blogs, and now they're working on a book deal.
Yeah. See, that's because how it starts.
It is something someone can look through from beginning to end and see a growth of a story that's compiled. And it's not just for the world. It's for you, too, to continue your story and how it grows.
Wow. And I think that's a big part of it, too, is if you can demonstrate where you were and where you are now, and people can see that growth and development, they're going to go, wow, they're as good as they are now, and they're continuing to develop. I want to hop on that wagon now, because
yeah.
I can see the trajectory they're on, which is upward. They're getting better over time.
You want to take your fans on the journey with you, right? That's something that's important about social media with actors and public figures, too, is it's not just a one-way communication wall. You have to have some interaction and a lot of listening. Social media is 90% listening. So it's not just putting things out there. Here's this show. Here's my next show. Here's my next show. Here's my next role. It's also about connecting and what's going on in your world. What do you like? What are things you're struggling with in your daily lives? What things help you? What things do you talk about? And I'm here listening to that. And then responding and becoming part of that conversation. So that's a huge part of it too, is being involved with conversations that are already happening and what worlds can be changed because of your actions. It's not just promotional. That's a huge part of it, but it's only probably a third of what happens online. I mean, social media is first social. So you have to engage, and it's a back and forth listening game with that too. It's very important.
Hey, nonfiction branders, did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Best-selling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And Chief Content Officer at Marketing Profs, Anne Hanley, said, "This isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media. It's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts." Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, R-O-T-O-M-A. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way.
We're recording this episode in the midst of COVID quarantine. You know, and let me just ask you this question. Have your clients gone dark during this time period because no one's working, no one's doing anything?
No, actually, work has increased because for the most part, voice actors can work from home, and the technology exists for them to still record shows, and they're still working that out. But there are shows, especially animated shows, that are still full in production. And from their technology they have from the studio or homes, they're still creating things. So as far as my job goes, my work has actually increased since the COVID crisis because we have to create more content because people are at home. So we have to create things for them to consume and also connect and remain connected with our fan base, because it's important not to get in a place where you're feeling alone and isolated. And specifically voice actors that are creating these characters that are heroes to people, it can be a huge comfort and sense of hope for them. So at the moment, that's where my focus is how can we create things that are still hopeful for people? So that's been a big focus the last few months.
Well, and also take a look at the content that a lot of these stars are creating. It's not them looking heroic and, you know, with Hollywood hair and makeup. It's them in sweatpants just talking about things that are happening. And, you know, maybe you see in the background their kids playing or their dog or their kitchen, you know.
Absolutely,
There's human interest in, oh my gosh, they have the same kind of stuff in their kitchen as I do. I feel some affinity to them that I would not have gotten if they were doing nothing but red carpet glamour shots.
It is an interesting time. I mean, we are seeing a whole side of everybody that we haven't seen before because we have no choice, right?
Right.
So yeah, this is presenting an actually really interesting time for us we're giving ourselves permission really to be vulnerable and authentic, and instead of packaging ourselves in a way that we have been for the last few years. And it's important that we can relate to the people that we're talking to the most. So yeah, it's been kind of a thrilling time to explore that side of creation.
Yeah, the funny thing is when the history of the COVID quarantine is written, the one night that is going to stand out as the night things changed was the one where Tom and Rita came out with COVID, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. It was discovered they had COVID-19 in Australia, and then right after that, the NBA canceled their season. You know, it was that personal information coming out that was deemed valuable by the globe.
Right.
You know, it wasn't Tom Hanks is starting in a new movie. It's, no, the nicest guy in Hollywood and his wife have this disease. It's serious.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it puts us all on the same level, on the same playing field.
Yeah.
You know, we're all affected by this. In some of the same ways, you know. I think we just did. I asked Carlos how he felt about just hopping on Instagram Live with no agenda, just check in with your fans and see how they're doing. How are they coping? What are you doing? And it was extremely helpful for his fans because you don't know who's tuning in and how lonely they are or how isolated they are. So it's important to stay connected. So that's what we're experimenting with, is how can we be a help to those that look up to us? And also, how can we relate to what everybody's going through in the world?
Yeah. And you can do it in a way that is still supportive of your personal brand, because keep in mind, the most important word in that little phrase is personal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. What a fantastic conversation, Justin. I really, really do appreciate it. I'm talking with Justin Baker, the owner of Fuzz Social in Los Angeles, California, USA, who works with voice actors and court reporters and musicians to, you know, project and communicate their personal brands via social media. And I loved hearing your stories and getting your input on this. And I would love to invite listeners to connect to you via your main social channels. What are they again?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter at very easy. It's Fuzz, F-U-Z-Z. And I'm on Instagram at Fuzz Baker. And then my company, my accounts are at Fuzz Social for both of those platforms.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. That's it for this week. I'm DP Knutton, and he is
Justin Baker.
And I'll be talking to you next time. Bye-bye.